Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 6th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, we'll tell you how whales avoid jamming each other's signals in the ocean, and we'll reveal the role an ugly little rodent is playing in the fight against cancer. But first, Suzanne Bard investigates a deadly fungus that's killing bats.
Bats across the northeastern United States are dying from a mysterious condition called white nose syndrome. It strikes during winter hibernation and can kill up to 90% of the bats in a cave. Experts think a fungal infection that covers the bats' noses and wings is to blame. Smithsonian biologist Nuturin Songsasin explains that the syndrome causes the bats to wake up from hibernation with depleted fat stores.
So you will see bats flying out in winter, which you're not supposed to see them.
She says seeing bats flying around outside their cave in the wintertime is an indication that the cave has been infected with the fungus. Unfortunately, moving around when they should be hibernating depletes the bats' energy stores even more.
And obviously in winter, there's no insects or food for these bats to eat, so they end up dying from the starvation.
Smithsonian biologist Warren Lynch says over a million bats have died so far. The researchers are concerned that the syndrome could soon spread to the five remaining caves known to house the endangered Virginia big-eared bat.
If the white nose syndrome gets into those caves, it could have a devastating effect on the population overall.
In addition to looking for cures, Lynch, Songsasin, and their colleagues at the Smithsonian Conservation and Research Center have begun an ambitious plan to breed the bats in captivity.
The biggest initial challenge is going to be acclimating them to captivity and to a captive diet. These are bats that primarily eat moths, and these have just never been housed in captivity before. So initially, our focus will be husbandry for the first year or two. If we can manage that, the ultimate test of whether your husbandry is working well is whether you can then get them to breed in captivity. And once we can do that, then we can grow our population and then start looking at doing research.
If successful, the researchers say this insurance population could come to the rescue if the bats go extinct in the wild.
Thanks, Suzanne. Like bats, sperm whales use echolocation to explore their environment, hunt for prey, and communicate with each other. To do this, they emit a series of clicks and listen for echoes. Groups of 4 to 5 whales hunt together, and researchers are trying to figure out how they can echolocate without jamming each other's signals.
We all know how difficult it is to extract the information if 4 or 5 people are talking at the same time.
That's physicist Natalia Sidorovska of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. She and her colleagues have evidence that each whale clicks in its own unique rhythmic pattern.
They would use the fine variations in the interclick interval for distinguishing their echo from the echoes coming from the other animals.
That way, each whale can zero in on its own sounds.
Thanks, Bob. Here's another animal story for you. You know the naked mole rat?
Oh yeah, that's one of my favorites. They're kind of these little rodents that look like pork sausages with fangs.
That's right. Well, they may not be winning any beauty contests, but medical researchers are learning to love them. Turns out they can live up to 30 years, but they never develop cancer. Scientists from the University of Rochester just reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that they may have discovered the mole rat's secret. It's a gene called P16 that stops cells from growing when they get too crowded. They're going to study how it works and find out if it could help prevent cancer in humans.
Thanks, Suzanne. That is really cool. I love naked mole rats. And, you know, people often make fun of research done on naked mole rats or desert pupfish or all these bizarre, strange creatures that live in these unusual places. But often those are the ones that have the most to tell us because they're adapting to life in unusual circumstances. And they have all these interesting adaptations you don't see in other places. And that can lead to all sorts of unexpected insights and breakthroughs. And I think the naked mole rat research in cancer is a perfect example of that. Okay, finally, it was election day in the U.S. on Tuesday, and Justin Warner has a story about the surprising relationship between election results and a man's testosterone levels.
According to past studies, men who watch their favorite sports team win can experience a short-term surge in testosterone. So there must have been a lot of raging hormones in Yankee Stadium on Wednesday night. Now, a new study says the same may apply to male supporters of this week's election winners, like Republican Chris Christie in New Jersey or Democrat Bill Owens in upstate New York. Last year, on the night of the presidential election, Duke University neuroscientist Stephen Stanton and his colleagues took saliva samples from voters in North Carolina and Michigan. They started when the polls closed on the East Coast and kept sampling until after Barack Obama was declared the winner. On a normal evening, men's testosterone levels slowly decline, but election night wasn't a normal evening.
We found that in men, testosterone levels in Obama voters were stable after the outcome of the election, whereas testosterone levels in men who voted for McCain and Bob Barr, the conservatives, dropped in a large magnitude and quite rapidly.
There was no such effect in female voters, even though women also have testosterone in their systems. As to why this happens, Stanton says it goes back to primitive dominance contests, not just in humans, but in other mammals as well. After a battle, a testosterone surge encourages the winner to take more risks and assert himself, while a drop in testosterone may help the loser avoid further conflict. Changes in the voter's mood were consistent with this narrative.
Conservative voters for McCain and Barr reported feeling submissive and controlled and unhappy and sad, whereas those who voted for Obama reported feeling very pleasant, very happy, very dominant and in control of their situation.
The study adds to the evidence that in contemporary human society, a vicarious win can be just as biologically powerful as a personal one.
Thanks, Justin. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we've got a whole new set of mind-expanding science stories for you. Until then, keep current on the world of science and discovery by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. And remember, if you have a science question for us, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win one of our brand new Science Update mugs. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.